but that's the old me. Out in out of my window, thrown down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday or a great whatever day you're listening to this, if you're listening to us on the podcast version of this show, or if you're listening live here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Hope you made it through the storms okay if you were in the area that was affected by Hurricane Helene. Luckily, here in the Pensacola area, we were just outside the cone of shame, or the cone of what do they call it? The cone of danger or whatever. We weren't in the storm path. Let's just put it that way. Despite the fact that it sure seemed like a whole lot of people here wanted us to be in that storm path for some reason. Wanted to just feel like they could be part of that, you know, that pre-storm panic and go buy up all the water and all the canned foods. And the one that really bothered me the most is my gym just decided it was an excuse to close for 2 days. It's like, you know, we got a little bit of breeze here. Your employees were just fine. And it was this thing of they announced, oh, we're going to close at 5 p.m. on Thursday and be closed all day Friday. It's like, by Friday, the storm was gone. And then, you know, say, all right, well, I plan around it for Thursday and go to the gym, you know, to be there like the last couple hours they'd be open. And then they changed it overnight and decided they were going to close at noon on Thursday instead. It's like, all right, I see you. You just wanted to grab a couple extra days off. I get it. Who doesn't want to grab a couple extra days off? But still, come on. Thankfully, we've been safe. Our hearts go out to anybody who has been in the area that was affected or was going to be affected. It did affect me in a small way. We'll talk about it in just a moment. But before we do that, I want to welcome to the show, as joining us as he does so very often to talk about everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Yeah, as Julio said, thoughts are with everybody that was affected by the hurricane. You know, living where we do, I think there is a level of PTSD, right? Some people are so legitimately terrified because of experiences that we've had in the past that they do tend to over prep. However, that's always got to be better than under prepping. And it's funny that you say that about the gym, because my office was closed yesterday, and I was very well aware at that point that we weren't really in any danger. So like you said, everybody gets a couple extra days off. I went to get some Italian food yesterday and they were closed down as well. But I understand people who would rather be safe than sorry. So hopefully this year continues to be good for us. I mean, it's I guess hurricane season officially lasts until the end of November, which was news to me, because I always think September, October, that's the danger zone, and we're already almost on the other side of it. So fingers crossed it stays like this. But Julio, you were mentioning that you were in some way impacted by the storm.
Yeah, I was originally planning to go to Atlanta this weekend to see Sisters of Mercy play at a concert in Atlanta. And weirdly enough, I think a lot of people know that we do record this show early. So we're recording Friday morning. The concert is scheduled for Friday night, and as of right now is still on. Which I don't understand, because I'm seeing the reporting out of Atlanta, and you know, I'm seeing flooding and I'm seeing power outages, and you know, I don't understand how they didn't make this decision 2 or 3 days ago to postpone this concert. So
interesting that they're still going.
I'm waiting to find out whether I'm going to get my money back or a reschedule date on this concert or not, and I'm a little irritated about that, because the band was supposed to play in St. Augustine on Thursday night. St. Augustine wasn't even in the cone, and they canceled that show.
Interesting.
And they canceled it plenty early. Now, it wasn't an amphitheater, so it was outdoors, so I'm sure that was part of the decision-making versus this show being at an indoor venue. But I just don't see – my thinking was, all right, even if the storm has passed, I don't know what roads are going to be like. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get gas. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get a hotel room. You know, I'm not driving through that. So
no shot.
You know, hopefully I'm not out the money. Hopefully the venue and the promoters make the right decision here. I don't even know if the band's even been able to make it into Atlanta. You know, they may not even be in the state.
if they didn't go to
St. Augustine, I don't know where they were the night before. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things, though. I mean, it's always easy to cast aspersions when you're not the one that's running that kind of thing. But, you know, being somebody that knows a little bit about how these kinds of things work, too. It's like, all right, are you just basically trying to hold on and thinking, well, you know, we've got power, so we can have the show. And, yeah, we might have 20 people that live in Atlanta show up and all these people from out of town. Well, we got their money.
Yeah.
I hope that's not what's going on here.
They're just going to have an acoustic session.
Well, I mean, I don't even think that. And I don't even think it's the, you know, in reality, I don't even think it's the band. You know, I think it's, and maybe, you know, it's probably a joint decision between the band and the promoters. But, you know, we don't like to blame our artists. You know what I mean?
Unless it's Francis Ford Coppola, apparently, but we'll talk about that some other time.
Well, I mean, it's one thing for it to be, you know, for the quality of a work of art, yeah, we're going to blame the artist. But when it's, you know, when it's like a business decision, it's like, you know, everybody's like, oh, Ticketmaster is the devil. And, you know, these artists are fighting for us. And, well, I mean, yeah, that's true to an extent. But, you know, there's also Ticketmaster doesn't set the original ticket price of the concert ticket.
Right.
Yeah. There are promoters that are involved in that, too. But at some point, the band is involved, too. But we don't like to blame our artists. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I feel the same way. You know, you have these people whose careers you follow, and you love their music, and or whatever they do. You love their comedy, or, you know, their stage show, you name it. You know, because lots of different things are involved in the business side of show business. But you know. You don't tend to blame the artist. You know, the Taylor Swift thing is a great example of that. You know, oh, Ticketmaster is evil because I can't get Taylor Swift tickets. Well, you know, I mean, Taylor does have some culpability in there, too. Some.
Yeah, I don't know the inner workings of it enough, but I do know that lately I just don't go to concerts anymore. I've kind of written it off of my just kind of life routines because the prices have gotten so outrageous, and I don't know who to blame, so I just blame just everybody collectively. I point at people in the street and say, this is your fault. Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, that we could probably do a whole show on that at some point about why the concert pricing has gotten out of control. And I mean, to some extent, you can blame technology. It's you know, it music got devalued, recorded music got devalued by the progress of technology, by, you know, first with things like Napster, with everybody wanting music free, and now
sure.
That's moved into a streaming economy where, yeah, artists are making a little bit of money off of streaming, more than they were off of Napster, but not nearly as much as they made when you had to go and buy a physical copy. And
right.
While for fans, it's great because you have access to basically every kind of music you want without having to shell out, you know, $15 every time you want to buy an album. And I say $15, that's not even really accurate anymore, because if you want to go buy a new vinyl album, more like close to $30.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the trade-off is the artists aren't making money on their recorded music anymore, so they've got to jack up their concert prices so they can make money on concert tickets. They've got to do these VIP experiences. They've got to do these brand deals because they got to eat too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to look at it as like, oh, these rich musicians. Well, not everybody is Taylor Swift. Not everybody's a billionaire. Most musicians are not. You know, they're just trying to make it to the next rent payment, just like everybody else. So I don't begrudge them, but it's difficult. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up.
You got to pump it up, don't you know? Pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know? Pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know? Pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know? Pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know?
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. I think what they're trying to say there, Jeremy, is pump it up. Don't you know?
I hated every second of that, Julio.
No, you didn't. it's like, all right, so like they heard Around the World by Daft Punk and said, hold my beer.
That's, yeah, they heard every Police song and said, hold my beer.
So there's a reason we're playing that, though. It's a song called Pump It Up by Endor, and it is the theme song from Pump It Up with Sue.
Great show.
Now, and if you don't, yeah, I mean, I'd watch it. Yeah, I'd DVR it and watch it on slow motion on repeat. But that's kind of the point. Now, if you don't know what we're talking about, we're actually talking about a show within a movie. There's a new movie out called The Substance. It's been out for a couple of weeks now. Just mind-blowingly great movie that we're going to talk about in some detail. I don't know how much spoiler territory we'll get into, but we'll probably get into a little bit of spoiler territory here. But this is not a movie for the faint of heart, Jeremy.
No.
And in a lot of ways, like, I know I saw it before you did, and you reached out to me as like, is my wife going to be able to handle this? And what'd you end up deciding on that, first of all?
I don't think she would like it, but probably not for the reasons that, I would have thought going into it. So Coraline Fargeau is the director of this film. This is her sophomore effort after the release of 2017's film Revenge. Revenge was kind of a feminist perspective on the assault revenge genre, which was popularized in the 1970s with movies like Last House on the Left and I Spit on Your Grave. Kind of interesting to see that unique perspective on it. Well, Fargeau followed that up with this movie that we're discussing now called The Substance, which stars Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. And it is essentially a movie about impossible beauty standards and obsessions with youth. Demi Moore plays an aging aerobics television icon who was a former Oscar-winning actress, and she kind of ages out of the business, is forced into retirement because she hits the age of 50. And there is a strange corporation that has created a medical treatment that will allow the user to split themselves into both their current self and a younger version of themselves, but they can only switch bodies for a week at a time. It's interesting. It's almost like a butterfly coming out of a cocoon, but then having to like go back into it every week. So that's kind of the premise of the movie. I thought it was a very, very fun movie. She definitely wears her influences on her sleeve. It's more of an allegory than it is some, like, deep character study. It's got a very stylish directing style that I loved, and I think it's going to be a cult hit for years to come.
I mean, I think it's beyond a cult hit. The reviews on this film are deservedly outstanding. And I think this might be, we've still got a few months to go right now, but this is right now maybe my pick for the best movie of the year.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think this movie has a lot to say. I do think it does have some character study elements to it, too, because Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley are playing the same character, but they're playing the same character from different perspectives. And I really think that what it has to say about instant gratification versus temperance and, you know, the way that, you know, we tend to, I mean, there's just a lot of psychology in this movie.
What you're saying right now, and that was something that I noticed. It's almost like the trade-off of when you live your life sort of hedonistically, when you're young, it's going to cost you later in life. And I thought the way that they kind of messed with that was really interesting, if that's what you mean, in regard to, like, the instant gratification part of it.
Right, right.
I feel like it's a movie that is way more style than substance, but as, like, a late-night kind of B-horror movie is where I think it shines the most. I don't know. I really loved it, but I don't think I would put it in, like, best film category personally.
Well, see, I think it's just the opposite. I think that it uses the trappings of B-horror movies to say a lot and to no pun intended, have a lot of substance.
I feel like that's been the MO for A24 for, like, years now, though, also.
To some extent. I mean, you have that, like, there is, you know, a fair amount of grotesquerie here. There is some serious body horror in the Cronenberg vein.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how did I put it when I said the climax makes, like, Carrie look like an actual prom night?
Yeah. And you were not exaggerating.
Yeah, I mean, it gets pretty outrageous. But I think it always does that in the service of having something to say. And it does have something to say from a feminist standpoint, but not necessarily in a way that's like, oh, women are better than men or anything like that. You know, this woman is not above exploiting her femininity to get what she wants, even when she knows that she's being exploited.
It's fascinating, right? That's kind of one of my things that I think about Coraline Frigeau, that I like about her, is there's this complexity. There's this almost like push and pull where the message, I can't speak to this with any sort of real depth or understanding, but she likes to have her cake and eat it too. This is a very heavy male gaze movie, and it really feels, like I mentioned, out of time, like where it doesn't exist in our current age, because like Jane Fonda was the one with the workout videos back in like the 1980s. So like it really feels like an 80s homage. But as far as like upholding the values that it is exploring, I don't want to say it falls short. It just doesn't, it's not concerned with that. And I don't know, maybe it's because she's a French filmmaker or something, but
I think surprised by
how sexualized the characters were considering the themes of it.
But I think that's kind of the point. Like, if you look at it on a surface level, it is, you know, appealing to that male gaze. But at the same time that it is appealing to that male gaze, it's an indictment of that male gaze. And it's kind of like one of the movies that this reminded me of in some ways. And it's a movie that I'm on record as saying, you know, that this movie is incredibly well done and well made, and I don't ever want to see it again. And that is Requiem for a Dream.
How so?
I think in the particular way of the male gaze side of it, I'm thinking of, you know, the way Jennifer Connelly is used in that film, and she has quite a bit of nudity. She has some sex scenes, and it's that kind of thing that you think
so differently about.
You think would be
even
Well, but I mean, that's just it. Like, it's the kind of thing that, like, on the surface would be titillating, but in context is completely not titillating. And I think that's exactly what's going on here. You know, you have this, even with Demi Moore's character at the beginning of the film, where, you know, it is kind of, hey, look at this. You know, Demi Moore is still a very attractive woman.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and it's very brave of both of these women to go to the extents that they go to in this film. But while it is appealing to the male gaze, it is an indictment of the male gaze. And that's very much shown through this is basically a two-hander movie between these two women. But the only significant supporting character in this is Dennis Quaid's TV producer.
Mm.
And that guy is like, he's like Vince McMahon.
It's a really good call. I feel like all of the male characters are pretty reprehensible. But I feel like it's more of an allegory than like grounded in our reality. So to your point, I didn't feel like it was anti-men by any chance, but it makes sure to frame all of them in such a way where they are very motivated by sex and the most surface level stuff.
It's more, I think, that not so much that they're motivated by sex as that they're using sex to get what they want, which in this case is money and power.
I meant the neighbor and the motorcycle guy.
Well, those are just, you know, those are just sleazy guys that are, you know, dragged into the web, basically.
Yeah.
Those guys, those characters are there to serve a purpose. They're not, you know, they're not characters that you spend any time with. This is really the film about this central character who goes by two different names in the film.
Who is one, and is it Elizabeth?
Elizabeth is Demi Moore, and Sue is Margaret Qualley, and
they are so good. I'm by no means am I saying this movie is not awesome. I just find it like an interesting and paradoxical thing. But yeah, the performances are awesome. I think it was such a good time. I wonder if we took 10 random women off the street to this movie, how they would feel about it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, this is just not a film for everybody, period.
I mean, yeah.
You know, it's a film that takes some thought. It's a film that you could just go in and see on a surface level, but I think there's just way more to it than that. And it's definitely not for everybody. It's not for the faint of heart. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge channel on YouTube. Jeremy, you don't know how hard it is for me to not just play a Pixie song all the way through.
It's a good song.
It is one of, you know, that song has become iconic, and it's really interesting because it's a song that was not a mainstream pop hit by any stretch of the imagination. Pixies never had any top 40 singles or anything like that.
Yeah, it was Fight Club, I bet.
Yeah, I think Fight Club is what has made this song iconic, but I think that the use of it in Fight Club has led to the use of it a lot of other places.
Mm-hmm.
And that in and of itself is what has made it to where it is now a song that I think most people know. I don't think it's a new song to a whole lot of people. And I think that it's the use of that song in Fight Club that is the direct reason why that song is used in the new trailer for the upcoming Marvel Cinematic Universe film Thunderbolts, which is the reason I'm playing this. We're going to talk about that trailer now. I think there's a direct correlation to the use of this song in Fight Club as to why they're using it in Thunderbolts.
Is it related to an asterisk?
It may well be related to an asterisk, but I think it is also related to a specific character.
Okay.
That character being maybe the one that was not the most obvious to anybody in the trailer.
Yeah, me included.
Yeah. I think that all of us are seeing the characters that we already know in this trailer. So the Thunderbolts in this film is a bunch of characters who, I guess, have been antagonists in previous Marvel films. I think it's maybe fair to say, who are being brought together as a group to undertake some kind of mission, possibly for the government, possibly for the CIA, because
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, sort of, which is not really exactly what the group started out as in the comics, but that's okay. I'm good with that. But you know, we've got these characters that we recognize from various other projects. We've got Florence Pugh playing Yelena Belova, who we met in Black Widow, also showed up in Hawkeye. We've got David Harbour as Red Guardian, also showing up in Black Widow. Hannah Kamen's Ghost from the second Ant-Man film. We've got Taskmaster, also from Black Widow. Black Widow was more important than you guys think, guys.
Looks like it. And I love that Taskmaster redesign.
Yeah. So John Walker from Falcon and the Snowman, the replacement Captain America / U.S. agent. It is this kind of coming together of characters that we haven't seen happen since the first Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second there. That has something to do with the asterisk here. All of these characters coming together, they're being assembled, and they even said there's even a tagline in there about be careful who you assemble.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason there's an asterisk on this title, and I think the reason of the asterisk is that Thunderbolts are the Dark Avengers. And I think I think by the end of this movie, we're going to see that. So I think that's part of the where is my mind. There's that whole dual identity thing. But even more so is a character who we only briefly see in the trailer. There's a scene in the trailer where all of these characters have been put into a room together and they're all going at each other. And then this guy busts out and he's like, hey, wait a minute, you know, hold on. This character played by Lewis Pullman, who is the son of Bill Pullman, greatest American president ever to live, according to some people. If you're an Independence Day fan, which I'm not particularly, but that's a divergence. But so you got this random like lab guy showing up, it looks like in the scene. That guy's not as random as you think he is. And that guy is going to be a central character in this movie, because that is the Sentry, who is a major Marvel character. And he is a major Marvel character who has a split personality. And that's where we're really getting into the Fight Club, where is my mind of it all.
Interesting.
Because spoiler alert for Fight Club, if you don't know, we'll go ahead and put up a spoiler alert for how old is Fight Club? 20 years old at this point, something like that?
Yeah, 1999, 25 years.
So we'll put up the spoiler alert for Fight Club. Spoiler alert, Brad Pitt doesn't exist.
What?
Tyler Durden is the narrator. He's just another personality of Edward Norton.
Mm.
The Sentry is a character very much like that. He is a guy that is basically a Superman analog. He has like kind of the same kind of power set and the big dramatic, you know, I could fly, I'm super strong, all that kind of stuff that Superman has. And he is kind of Marvel's answer to Superman in that he does have this very mild-mannered alter ego, but he also has a dark side that it becomes another character called the Void. And I think that's really what we're getting at with the "Where Is My Mind" use in this trailer. There, and I think the trailer is kind of misleading us down one path too, and thinking that this is, you know, here's this rollicking adventure with all these antagonistic characters that you've seen. And yeah, we're going to get that too, but I think what we're really getting here is the intro of the Sentry.
And I think, yeah, it sounds like he'll probably be the antagonist of the movie. And I like Marvel movies, even though Phase 4 isn't perfect. It's not up to the caliber of some of the earlier ones. This trailer legitimately has me so excited for this movie. The tone of it is just right on time. It's really working for me. And as you said, like, seeing all these characters come together in this fight scene, and the way that choreography is just so cleverly staged. And I was wondering who that guy was. So it makes a lot of sense that he is going to be the, and whether it's the Void or whether it's the Sentry, these are characters I'm not super familiar with, but I think he's going to be the person that they have to fight against, you know?
Well, and now let me ask you this, because you may know, some of you may know that are listening, that there were a number of people that were cast in this movie that, because of the strikes and everything that happened there and or scheduling issues, dropped out. So we've got Lewis Pullman here, cast as Bob / the Sentry. But that role was meant to go to Steven Yeun.
Oh yeah.
And Steven Yeun had to drop out. So what are your feelings there?
Big Steven Yeun fan. Would like to see him in more major projects. I had no idea this was Bill Pullman's son, so that's kind of cool in itself. Being that Steven Yeun is already invincible, I kind of like keeping an actor attached to an identity and kind of keep that going. I know it's not like that very often. Actors get recast all the time. Certain actors play multiple characters. I mean, Chris Evans, for example. But I kind of would have liked to see Steven Yeun, but only because I'm familiar with him. This new guy could be great. What do you think?
I would like to see Steven Yeun in this as this character. I think that based on just the little bit I've seen, Lewis Pullman seems to be more comics accurate casting.
Okay.
Like I think Steven Yeun can play the heck out of anything you put in front of him. And I don't have a problem with the fact that the character was not Asian in the comics and he would have been Asian in the movie. Lewis Pullman looks more like the character in the comics in that he's a blonde white dude, but there's just something about the way he inhabited the little bit of the role we've seen in the trailer that just kind of feels a little bit more apropos to me too. So
I like this trailer. I always feel like the first trailers get me and the second ones show way, way, way too much. So if there is a point in the future when the second one comes out, I don't know that I even want to have that conversation. We'll circle back to it when that time comes, but I always am so intrigued. And then I feel like they gave up the ghost by the time the second one, and no pun intended. But
we saw ghost in this one.
Yeah. A real good example of that, Speak No Evil. But anyways, yeah, as far as this trailer goes, big fan, Julio. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I gotta be honest with you. While I like analyzing like the music and everything, this trailer didn't wow me as much as I kind of hoped it would.
Interesting.
I did think there's some interesting fight choreography and stuff in there, but I think that there's potentially a lot more going on in this movie. So I'm excited about the movie, but I'm not necessarily excited about it because of the trailer.
Interesting.
I'm excited about it more for the potential. And I also think this has the potential of a lot of hanging plot lines that have been hanging around in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a while now, finally coming together and moving forward. Because there are an awful lot of hanging plot lines out there right now.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, we're seeing some of that in some other movies too. We're seeing the leader return in Captain America: Brave New World, which is a character we haven't seen since the second Marvel Cinematic Universe film. So hopefully, I would like to see all of these plot threads come back together. So hopefully that's where we're going. Got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
when I look out my window. Many sights to see. And when I look in my window, so many different people to be, that it's strange, so strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. Mm-hmm. Must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. Jeremy, man, that song just plays really well for intro music. It like fades out like right there where it's time to talk. It's like it,
yeah,
just,
it worked,
just worked
good.
Worked out perfectly. Season of the Witch by Donovan. The reason we're playing that is that you get to hear that song at the very end of the first episode of the new series Agatha All Along on Disney Plus. Finally getting to this spinoff from WandaVision some three-ish years later. Speaking of lingering plot threads in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's wild to think it was that long ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it was, that show dropped like right as the pandemic was starting.
Yeah, a lot happened since then.
Yeah, a little bit. On this day and age, it seems like a lot happens every week. So,
that's true.
So, I mean, it's in one sense, it's only 3 years ago. In another sense, 3 years ago feels like a millennium ago. But I'm really digging this show so far, Jeremy. We're three episodes in. I know you've only seen the first two, so we'll limit our discussion to the first two. And I kind of just sat down and watched them all in one fell swoop. And I'm really digging this. And one of the reasons I'm really digging this is because this is not really a superhero show. Like it's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we've seen a lot of things where like, oh, well, you know, Ant-Man is a heist film. Well, yeah, it was, but it was still a superhero movie. This is really more of a dark fantasy film. And it, so far, three episodes in, we haven't really seen any real like superhero elements. And I'm really good with that. I also think it's very interesting because the characters that are used in the show, there's a couple of them that do originate from the comics, but they're not being used in a very comic booky kind of way. And I just think that this is the first project we've seen from Marvel where I don't feel like it's just adapting or taking off in a new direction, something that came out of the comics. This feels more like something that's being created from whole cloth with just some minor bases and comic stuff. And I'm kind of interested in that. Do you have a thought on that? I'm guessing you haven't read a whole lot of comics with any of these characters.
No, and from what I understand, I mean, Agatha's even kind of a secondary character, so I can imagine the ones that are featured in the comics are probably even lower down the tier list of characters that are often utilized.
Yeah, Agatha Harkness is very much a supporting character in the comics. First of all, she's, from a visual perspective, a much older character than Catherine Hahn appears to be. I recognize
right.
that we're saying the character's 400 and some odd years old or whatever, but Catherine Hahn appears to be a woman in her 30s?
Yeah.
Maybe early 40s. I don't know. I don't know what Catherine Hahn's actual age is. But, you know, whereas the character in the comics is a very wizened old woman in appearance.
Right. Reads as a crone.
She first came in as the nanny for the Fantastic Four. She took care of their kid.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and then, you know, she went off into these other tangents and was related to Wanda, et cetera, et cetera. She was always a sorceress, but yeah, very much not a character that's ever like held their own title or anything like that. some of these other characters. Jennifer Kale is a fairly prominent magic user in Marvel Comics. The Rio character played by Aubrey Plaza, that is a character that comes from the comics. But yeah, I mean, I feel like this has gone off in its own direction, and I'm really good with that.
I like what you said there. Like, everything you said resonates with me. The fact that it is deviating from formula in the context of the MCU is cool, and I appreciate that because you kind of got to do things differently than was done in WandaVision. It kind of starts off in that, and I'm not sure in the direction that things go in episode 3 if we kind of go back to the TV land aspect of things.
We don't.
But, okay. I will say, I'm not getting it so far. It's not hitting quite in the way that I think it's supposed to. And look, this is aimed squarely at a demographic that, I guess on one hand, you could say I'm a Marvel fan, so it is my demographic. On the other hand, it is a very specific tone and style, and while it might be different for Marvel, it feels very Disney. And I'm a fan of Disney, and that's okay, but, like, the humor is just off-center enough, like, that it doesn't land for me so far. And, I mean, the music is cool, like the little witch song that they sing at the end of episode 2, but it feels so quintessentially Disney and really close in proximity to, like, I mean, obviously, like, The Wizard of Oz, but maybe more like Maleficent or Hocus Pocus, any of these number of things that I'm just not really that big of a fan of. So,
well, I mean, but is that Disney or is that just central to witchcraft mythos?
I don't think, I mean, you could go a lot of different directions with the witchcraft mythos. I mean, like, for example, The Craft is that movie that came out in the 90s, and I don't see a whole lot of cross. There is some, obviously, the incantations and stuff like that.
Well, and you also, amongst the, one of the things I've really been enjoying about this show is the end credits, which does have a lot of allusions to famous witches throughout pop culture, and one of them is Firouza Balk's character from The Craft does show up in those end credits.
That's a good character. And I'm not, I'm on board. I'm going to continue to watch it. I think there was a lot of anticipation. And then even after it was released, a whole lot of fuss about it. And I don't feel like it aligns with my viewing taste as much as something that we're not talking about today, but we'll probably circle back around to. And that is HBO's The Penguin, which is, you know, the new Sunday night show. And that to me just, you know, it's more traditional, male viewing, I think, like what middle-aged guy doesn't love a gangster movie or whatever. So like, maybe I'm just comparing the two. I don't know.
Well, I'll be interested to see what you think after the third episode, because I think the third episode does go off into some other territory. I think it was a smart idea to release the first two episodes at once, because I do think the whole bit with the first episode basically being an almost episode long Mare of Easttown parody went a little bit too far.
I agree,
we almost had too much of that. Like it built to something, and where it built to was really good. And I really loved the visual aspect of the end part of that episode with Agatha coming back into her own.
It was very cool.
And going through all of the various decades of incarnations of her that we saw in WandaVision.
Yeah, very cool.
And I think it was especially effective when we're in this full color world, and the last one she turns into is the black and white version from the beginning of WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
Like the effect on the you know, as much as people complained about some of the visual effects in some of the Marvel series that have come along in the past, the effects on that were just spectacular. That just looked so good.
The Spooky Seven, I don't know what they're called. I'm not vibing with them. People said that it was kind of scary. I feel like it was shot so flatly, and the weird movement was not. I think it's just the general overall presentation of it that I'm struggling with. So I do think that it has potential, and I'm definitely going to watch episode 3 once we finish discussing it. But yeah, for right now, Not wild about it.
Well, I think the first two episodes are very much the prelude.
Yeah. Setting it up, and I can see that.
And I could have also seen an argument for just doing one, like, these episodes are a little longer than some of the other Marvel series have been, too. They're running about 37, 38, 45 minutes, somewhere in there. I kind of almost wish they would have just done one, like, 45-minute episode and cut down on some of the parody stuff. I get why they did it, and I get why they were making the allusion to WandaVision and everything. But that maybe went on for a little long, and then the second episode is all about the gathering of the coven. And it's great because it introduces all these characters and it introduces you to what their motivation is.
I do like all of them a lot. Also, by the way, the old psychic lady in particular, great character.
Patti LuPone, you know, Tony Award winning, you know, goddess of the theater. You can't go wrong. The cast on this is fantastic. Sasheer Zamata has been a lot of fun in this. And then, you know, she's only been in the one episode so far, but you can never go wrong with Aubrey Plaza as far as I'm concerned.
Interesting character.
More Aubrey and everything. And this is like, it's Aubrey weekend too, because of course she's in Megalopolis, which was just released this weekend. And we're finally getting her other new movie, My Old Ass, in local theaters this weekend, which I very much want to see. So I'm here for more Aubrey. Bring me all of the Aubrey, please.
Yes,
please. More Aubrey, please. So I know we're going to get more of her in the series as it continues along the line. I'd be interested to see. We'll definitely talk about this more in the future, but we are just about done for today. So thanks so much for listening. And got to check the schedule. We're not sure about a FSU football schedule next week, so maybe you'll hear us and maybe you won't. But until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.